Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Yes, I'm Daniel Hanley. I'm an IBM staff software engineer with IBM Security Division, and I'm also one of the organizers with the IBM Petition.org campaign to reaffirm IBM's values.
So tell us, let's go back to the beginning and talk about how this campaign got started at IBM.
Well, I would say it was prompted by Ginni Rometty's letter to Donald Trump on November 16th. As you may know, shortly after Donald Trump was elected, Ginni Rometty penned a public letter to Donald Trump, and she said many things in it, but among the things she said, she praised his plans for corporate tax breaks and congratulated him on his election, and then she pledged to collaborate on certain areas. These areas included government infrastructure and security, concerned many people, willingness to collaborate with Donald Trump in these areas, particularly when you consider what Donald Trump considers security. So this sparked a lot of outrage on the internal, IBM blog.
Yeah.
IBM, to its credit, did ask people to provide some feedback and, provided a forum for discussion below Ginni Rometty's letter internally. The response was quite incredible. You know, working at IBM for over 10 years, I haven't seen anything like this. People spoke up. They were expressing a range of negative emotions, largely. Like, the most liked comments on the blog were expressing disappointment. People asked, Ginni, what about our values? What about diversity, inclusion, respect? Donald Trump represents the opposite of all these values to us. So at least you could have, clarified the extent to our participation in the Trump administration. Then other people, were more scathing in their criticism. They said, well, if we look at IBM's history, IBM dealt with Nazi Germany to sell products and services that identified Jews during the Holocaust, for extermination. IBM dealt with the apartheid regime in South Africa. So now after reading this letter, we're a little worried. We're concerned that IBM might do it all over again if they could make some profit and get away with it. So these were the kinds of comments, things that people were saying. Among other things, people referenced Trump's, business dealings. And, now that Trump is president, obviously, according to our business conduct guidelines at IBM, we can't do any deals with Trump businesses. So some people are calling for a clarification on that. Just in general, discussed outrage and, really, IBM didn't give any kind of adequate response to all these concerns that people addressed. So I think we tallied, dissenters in the hundreds on the internal blog. I was quite moved seeing so many of my colleagues express these values, standing up for them, even against the company's chief executive. One of my proudest moments working at IBM, seeing that. That's what prompted the campaign. Once we were ignored individually, many of us got together and decided, well, we need to organize this into a collective voice that can't be ignored by IBM executives. So we used the coworker.org platform to draft a petition. It was put together by a team of IBMers from different perspectives, different parts of the company. We came together. We got feedback from about 50 IBMers who eventually signed on to the petition. And at that point, we went public with it. And it got an incredible response after that.
Excellent. Tell us about the organizing process there and how that has grown since the petition went public. You've gotten quite a lot of signatures from IBM workers.
Yeah, well, the organizing process, it's quite challenging as it is for tech workers everywhere, I think, because in many of these workplaces, it's a very geographically distributed environment. You know, people might not have the same kind of rapport with a lot of their colleagues. A lot of people aren't in the office. So yeah, there are challenges, but with the core group that we had signing on, we were able to, and also the media attention it got from The Intercept and social media as well, we were able to reach out to more and more. Let me back up. We emailed, we reached out to 500 people or so that had expressed dissent on Ginni Rometty's letter, and we found this like on Facebook and LinkedIn and, you know, various other platforms where people working at IBM had criticized this letter. So we reached out to them first, and you know, the response rate we got was quite impressive. A lot of people wound up signing the petition. Then among the people who signed the petition, we tried to recruit a core organizing team in various IBM office locations. So, you know, throughout the country, you know, there were key point people who were down to post up flyers, make phone calls to follow up with all the people on our list. And we had some great conversations, and we would ask people like, hey, do you want to get involved to try to grow this campaign? Are you willing to post a flyer in your workplace? Are you willing to share these articles on social media? And we got a good response from that as well. So we eventually, you know, up to today, we've got weekly conference calls with about 24 people around the country that participate. And, you know, this is the basis, you know, it's not just the petition campaign isn't just names on a list of names below a document. You know, we're trying to form the basis of an organization that can hold IBM accountable to our values. So that's kind of the organizing structure behind it. I don't think we've actually spoken about the demands of the petition campaign yet. What the petition is calling for is, you know, one, we want IBM to respect our right to refuse any participation in any illegal Trump projects that violate the civil liberty, violate the civil liberties of immigrants, Muslims, women, the LGBT community, marginalized groups in general. That's the first demand. The second is we want IBM not just to talk about diversity and inclusion, but take some concrete steps in response to Trump's election to show that we value diversity and inclusion by expanding the diversity recruitment program. Three, we want IBM to clearly sever all ties with Trump-related business entities. We don't want the next IBM Interconnect 2018 conference to be held at a Trump hotel. And strangely, I searched on, we searched on IBM's internal website for, like, employee discounts, and we are being offered a discount at a Trump hotel in Miami. So we think a clarification on the business conduct guidelines is in order. And then lastly, since so many IBMers are feeling upset, you know, threatened by the Trump administration right now, and we're living in precarious times, we want meaningful security in the form of restoration of benefits that have been recently cut. IBM cut the severance pay by 80%. The 401k policy uses an accounting trick that denies people who are laid off equal contributions. Basically, they wait till the end of the year to make any contribution to the 401k, which is affecting people right now. Especially older IBMers that are impacted by this this age discrimination campaign and process. IBM is requiring long-term workers to co-locate in to one of many cities in the United States. This is for U.S.-based workers. They're being asked to uproot and move, you know, even though their kids might be in school. They may have a partner that has a job. You know, they're being asked to just turn their life upside down. Or they lose their job, no questions asked, no severance. So we want IBM to reaffirm all of its values, diversity, inclusion, respect for the individual, a core IBM value, and also ethical business conduct.
I think one of the things I wanted to ask was actually how, you know, this connects up with the internal working conditions at IBM, that, you know, when we're talking about the company's values, mostly we see those values expressed in how the workers are treated.
Right, absolutely. And like all these demands are, you know, related to workplace issues. We don't want to be legally liable for harming our own communities with any Trump projects, you know, the way like Palantir is being asked to do right now. and the way IBM, you know, may have harmed these communities in the past, as I mentioned before.
Right.
So, like our argument is implicitly that, you know, the way we're waging this campaign is that these empty, hollow corporate statements can never adequately embody our values. It's the people who do the work at IBM, the people who innovate, we express our values because, you know, these corporate statements are always going to be motivated at the end of the day by the pursuit of profit, the pursuit of these lucrative Trump government contracts.
A friend of mine who's a reporter based in the Bay Area was talking about looking up the political contributions from tech industry employees and then tech industry leadership or tech industry political action committees, things like that, and the difference between the values of sort of young workers in these industries and the people at the head of their companies is often, there's often quite a gap there. And so I wonder if you can talk about this in the context of sort of the broader conversation about the tech industry and the tech workforce and all of the other issues that tend to swirl around that with economic inequality and gentrification and all of that situation, that Trump seems to be the thing where we're seeing the tech workforce step out from under the shadow of its bosses and really take a political stance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to understand our campaign in the broader context of the tech industry. Many of the people who were there at the Speak Out in Atlanta on Monday, there's a video online at IBMpetition.org, and you know the largest group present were IBMers speaking out, but we were joined by community supporters, some of whom were involved in the local tech solidarity meetups. So, you know, we're seeing these tech solidarity groups pop up all over the country. There's a big tech stands up group, there's the tech workers coalition. And what's really exciting for us is that our own campaign has inspired a sister campaign over at Oracle calling on its own CEO to join the amicus brief in opposition to the Muslim ban. So, you know, this is definitely, you know, not just happening in a vacuum, but, you know, we're seeing a sort of tech consciousness arising here. And moreover, I want to go back to something else you said about, like, the younger millennial tech workers. You know, these are people who are appalled by Trump's racism and xenophobia and Islamophobia. So what I've heard from internal sources and involved in HR and involved in, like, recruitment from the open source community, they're saying that now their jobs are much more difficult because of Ginni Rometty's proximity to Trump and her refusal to give, like, at least a clarification or on a relationship or, you know, strong opposition to any projects that violate civil liberties. So, yeah, the younger potential recruits are feeling alienated. The older, long-term IBMers are also feeling very upset and worried about their futures because of the severance cuts and all the other issues I raised before. You know, who does that leave us? You know, this is a contradictory strategy. I think the IBM petition campaign will hopefully move Ginni Rometty to address both of these problems in a positive way.
But you have not heard anything from her or from the higher-ups so far, correct?
No, we haven't heard any sort of adequate response to our demands. There was, you know, since this campaign started, we feel like our campaign may have influenced her. She did write a statement about the Muslim ban, but I would not call this an adequate response. Many members of our campaign were very critical of it. You know, it did not, to my knowledge, pacify anybody. Because, you know, for one, there were a couple differences. For one thing, until it was leaked, maybe deliberately, to TechCrunch, this was an internal letter. It wasn't written as a public letter like her letter to Trump. One thing. Another thing is, you know, now that forum I referenced earlier where people could discuss and debate the issues, it was shut down. There was no comment section this time. And we didn't think that was delivered as well. So the thing that struck me the most, though, was the content of this letter. For one thing, it portrayed this struggle around the debate as a struggle between openness and security. Those were words that she said, you know, it's about openness and versus security. And I think that's, you know, very harmful, because portraying the Muslim ban as a security measure is not factual. It's misleading. Federal courts observed that there's no security justification for it, you know, so calling it a security measure is wrong. It's an Islamophobic measure. It's a discriminatory measure.
But obviously, that, as you said, these tech companies, among many other corporations that like to sort of portray themselves as bastions of diversity, they do tend to have a fairly diverse workforce on some levels, not so much on others. I think it's interesting that in this context, one of the demands here is to do some actual work on the diversity in the tech workforce. Wonder if you could talk about the way the demands here that include actual, you know, doing some work on the actual diversity. How, again, this is a moment to sort of hold the tech companies accountable to the rhetoric that they are preaching, but not usually or not always practicing.
Well, IBM is a very big and powerful institution.
Yeah.
In the United States, and it employs hundreds of thousands of workers worldwide, and even, you know, many of those are, I'm not sure exactly how many, but I've heard a third are in the United States now. So as this powerful institution, you know, we have a role in these kind of institutional challenges around diversity versus, you know, racism and Islamophobia and xenophobia. And I think this campaign can advance IBM in responsibly using its power to advance these values.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's in terms of the projects that we take on, or the statements we make as a company, or the policies in terms of recruitment and diversity. You know, many groups of people are underrepresented in my workplace. I should note, I live in Atlanta. This is a very diverse city, you know, so I would expect people of color to be more greatly represented in our workplace. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
Anything else that people should know about this campaign that maybe hasn't been discussed very much?
It's very heartening to see other tech workers take action elsewhere. You know, we think our organizing model is sound and has some proven results. We strongly support things like the Never Again Pledge, which, as you may know, it's an alliance of workers among many companies making a broad statement of principles that they, you know, never again are we going to use our role in these companies to sell technologies like the punch card machines to the Nazis. You know. That broad statement of principles is very, very powerful. But at the end of the day, in our own workplaces, we have leverage to submit policy changes like those that IBMPetition.org has proposed to their company's executives. We think this is a successful model, and that, you know, I feel very validated, you know, when people at Oracle and elsewhere adopt it as well.
I also spoke with longtime IBM worker Sesha Baratham, another organizer on the campaign who is part of a petition delivery team.
My name is Tasha Baratham. I'm originally from Singapore, and I've been at IBM for 16 years. I currently work as IT consulting services in Boston.
And so how did you get involved with the campaign and the petition to IBM CEO about working with Trump?
Like a lot of people, I think I read Jimmy's open letter to Trump and was basically appalled that the CEO of the company that I work for should be pledging to work with someone like Donald Trump, whose values I don't think match my own, or I believe the company that I work for, IBM.
Yeah.
And what particularly got me is that it was completely unconditional and included things like approving tax cuts for corporations, which just seemed totally crazy to me.
When you started working on the campaign, can you tell me about what it was like getting involved, talking to coworkers?
Sure. So Daniel, I think before going public with the petition, he emailed a couple of people who had expressed objections to the Ginny's open letter, and I signed the petition, and Daniel asked if I'd like to get involved with contacting people, getting people to sign the petition, and see where we could take it. I gladly did that. You know, that was something I felt was important to do, to start talking about these things within the company, because, you know, it's just a culture in a lot of workplaces. I don't think it's just in tech companies, but in a lot of places, you just don't talk about politics.
Right.
And this was clearly, to me, it was something that completely very political, what Ginny had done, write a letter to then President-elect Trump, and which I found objectionable on you know, moral and general grounds of values.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the things that struck me when I read the letter is I couldn't believe it, because I felt that Donald Trump was someone, you know, if I did some of the things that he'd done, I would lose my job. I mean, if I advocated for sexually assaulting women, I would lose my job. And it's not the kind of customer or value we want to be associated with. So yeah, that was, yeah, so I decided to get involved, and Daniel put together a list of people who had signed the petition and started making calls and talking to people. And I found, I mean, these were people who signed the petition, so obviously they were sympathetic, but many of them either were not prepared to devote any time to organizing around it.
Yeah.
But I totally understand that too. But there was a lot of support too. A lot of people expressed how grateful they were. I myself, when Daniel reached out to me, I felt a sense of optimism that something was happening at least, that there was going to be this place where we could talk about it and bring our concerns and shared values into the light.
Right. Yeah. And you were involved in the petition delivery, correct?
Yes, that's right. So there were two petition delivery events, mm-hmm. one in Atlanta and one in New York. I was at the one in New York at the Watson headquarters in downtown Manhattan. So Daniel and I did some flyering outside the office in the morning, and unfortunately it was a wet and cold day, so there wasn't the turnout that we might have liked, but I don't think that, you know, people stopped and listened, and I thought it was great. I think people were aware of what was happening, and you know, we were making a definite statement.
Yeah. So you've been at IBM for quite a long time now. This is, as you were saying, you don't usually talk about politics at work, but is this the first time you've been involved in something like this?
Yes, it is the first time I've been involved with something like this, something that, you know, something like a directly that I'm connected with. I during the Bernie campaign, I did, I volunteered for him, mm-hmm. did some phone banking and worked on his email help desk. But yes, this is the first sort of action that I've taken part in.
And what has it been like at IBM since the workers started speaking out about this?
Surprisingly, I work from home, mm-hmm. so I'm not in the office and don't talk to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But as I said, at work in the normal course of business, it was not brought up at all. I did talk to a couple of colleagues, and there was not much interest, which didn't really surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that is. I think it's a sense that it's pointless.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can sort of understand that attitude, even people feeling that the petition delivery events were in a sense tiny and you know, weren't meaningful. I can understand that they feel like that. I obviously did not. I think it was a very important thing to do, make a direct response to the letter and have some concrete demands.
So I know that many of the workers who signed onto the petition are from communities that are directly targeted by Trump. As somebody who is an immigrant yourself, tell me how that plays into this.
Apart from the general values, when Trump passed, you know, released that executive order, the Muslim ban, and IBM's response was really corporate gibberish. It just felt like that was something very obvious that IBM could have stood up and spoken up against. And as an immigrant, it just happens that I had to renew my green card. And one of the questions they asked is, what category of green card holder are you? And I looked it up and it was highly skilled worker. Mm-hmm. So I felt like IBM said in one of their statements that they were reaching out to all their employees who were affected. But I think that's a very self-interested, you know, that sort of represents self-interested. And I felt that IBM really cannot protect its own workers if it doesn't also stand up for everyone who's affected by it. And so I was extremely disappointed by that.
Yeah. Anything else you think people should know about what's going on at IBM and the resistance from other parts of the tech industry to the idea of collaboration with Trump?
I think I don't know of any other companies that are where there's an internal movement of workers to hold their leadership accountable to values and really give a voice to the workers for their concerns and basically to look out for their well-being. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a new different thing, and I think that to me it feels like tech workers have in the past been, you know, very privileged in a way. They have comparatively well-paid jobs and more security than a lot of other areas. But I think even tech workers now are really feeling the crunch of the economy and uncertainty about their own futures and livelihood. I know I myself am in my mid-50s and I've been with IBM for a long time and over that time I've just started feeling more and more insecure about my job and whether the company really has my interests in mind at all in whatever they do. And my sense is that they don't.
And how can people keep up with the campaign?
Yeah, well, you can go to IBMpetition.org and sign on as a supporter, but we also have a Facebook page, also called IBMpetition.org. And IBM's a big company, you know, so a lot of people I run into say, hey, oh yeah, my uncle works at IBM or what have you. So, my niece just got a job there. So if you know anybody working at IBM who supports these same values, please connect them with us. We're still trying to grow our organizing team because, like I said, even if tomorrow Ginni Rometty were to implement all of our proposals in our petition, we would still need an independent organization that can hold executives accountable to those values.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.